This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
What is up, everyone, and welcome to the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. This is episode 127. We are here out of our Christmas hibernation, back to spread the Dreamcast love, as always. I am James, if you hadn't guessed that already, and I am joined, as usual, by some fine fellows of the Dreamcast establishment. I'll start first with, I think, Mr. Loz. Mr. Lozer, how are you?
Hello. Back once again. Yeah, I am fine and dandy.
Did you have a nice Christmas?
Yes, yeah. It was drama-free, had some good food, and saw a lot of folks. So, yeah, decent.
As you get older, drama-free is just kind of, you know, what you aim for in life in general, isn't it? Drama-free is nice. Next up, we have Harvey, who a lot of people confuse for me when we are in PC Wizard streams together, because we have James Harvey and Harvey as well. But anyway, Harvey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Good Christmas break for you, sir.
Very jolly, yeah. Went up to Mid Wales, where my family's from, hung out there. Had a good time, played some games, which we'll talk about in a sec.
There's not much else you can do in Mid Wales, to be fair.
No. There is a little bit of... there's a pond that you can throw stones in, which is pretty fun. But no, we did that on the first day, and it got a bit boring, and then we just played games.
You can't go wrong playing games over Christmas, to be fair. And finally, but by no means least, I'm going to continue to refer to him as the new Dreamcast Junkyard leader. Lewis, how are you, my friend?
Hello, yeah, I am doing well. I would say fine and dandy, but Loznik's my catchphrase.
I did that on purpose.
I remember I said that like off the cuff on one episode and Tom never let me live it down.
It becomes your thing then, doesn't it? Anything you say whilst you're on the airwaves, it's, it can quite quickly become your catchphrase.
Yeah.
Good. Well, chaps, we normally have an introductory question. So keeping it fairly related, as I said, first show back after Christmas, Harvey's already mentioned it. It's normally a time where we get together and play some video games, either on our own or with family or friends. So let's talk about what we played over Christmas, Dreamcast or otherwise. And once again, Lars, I'm going to come to you first.
Ooh, first both times. I'm very privileged. Mm. Yeah, so I cracked out my screwdriver and turned my old LCD monitor onto its side once again to play some shmups, as they're meant to be played in the proper Tarte mode, vertically. Mm. So I revisited a handful of those games. Mainly I was playing Radigy and I never know how to pronounce this. Karos.
Like crow in Japanese, is that right?
It is. So both Milestone shooters, and a lot of fun.
What is Tarte mode?
I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right either, Harvey, but it's so that is just where you turn your screen 90 degrees so that it's vertical.
Oh,
and yes. The Tarte mode, obviously, it removes the borders and whatever, because if it's a vertical shooter, it's meant to be played like that.
Very cool.
But natively, they normally default to having borders on there, because obviously most folks, you know, especially back in the day, if you had some honking big CRT screen, you might not be able to just tip it over.
Bloody casuals, eh?
So is it in the settings, you just you change a setting and it flicks it? It changes it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Cool. And then you turn your screen, obviously. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Pro.
Yeah, if you're hardcore like Loz. Harvey, what did you get up to in Mid-Wales there, my friend?
So I think probably the most notable and relevant thing that I did over Christmas was play Bomb Rush Cyberpunk.
Nice.
Bought the hard copy, because I love a hard copy. I just love the little red Switch boxes on my shelf. They look great. And I could not believe how good it was. It's so brilliant. It just moves and it just looks and moves fantastically. I you know, when something's just satisfying to engage with, just whether you're doing something that's genuinely engaging or just walking around or just doing the odd kickflip, it's just a nice environment to be in. And I'm really impressed. We're going to talk about this later, but Sega's going to have to really pull something out of the bag to top that, I think, with their new remaster.
You know a game is good when you can just enjoy messing about in it and not necessarily actually progressing your game save or whatever, you know, for a certain period.
Which I didn't really do. I just kind of twiddled around and I had such a good time.
Yeah, that's when you know a game is not, is kind of very, a very good use of your time. It always reminds me of Grand Theft Auto 3 when that first came out and the amount of times I would literally just drive around listening to the radio doing absolutely nothing for hours on end. And it's just kind of, you know, it's rare that those experiences come around where you just like to be sort of caught up in the universe that has been created for you. And it's it's a really good feeling when that happens.
That's a really good example, isn't it? You know, when you're driving around a GTA 3 obeying the traffic lights and you're trying to drive properly. Yeah. It's quite fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Another cool thing I did, this was actually before Christmas, but I was helping someone clear out a house and I was going to and from the tip, and at the tip I found a Sony Trinitron VGA CRT and I nicked it from the tip and it works great and it looks incredible.
I swear they've like stopped it. Like, I swear my dad used to be like, oh, can I have that, and they'd give it to him, whereas now you can't actually like ask for stuff. I saw a Dreamcast at the tip and I was like, no way. Yeah, I saw
When did you see that?
It was like years ago. My dad was dropping some stuff off and I saw, I think it was a PlayStation 1 and a Dreamcast. And I was like, oh, there's a Dreamcast. But like, and my dad actually went up to the guy and was like, oh, can we get that? And they're like, oh, no, sorry, it's not allowed. Ugh.
They're just going to stick it on eBay, aren't they?
Yeah.
Well, it probably got crushed, unfortunately. I don't know what they do with it, like stick it in a landfill or something.
Do you know what? Because I went to and from the tip so many times, I consider myself an expert now. Okay. you just can't, you have to look both ways and cheekily jump in because
really
it's, I think it's like if you cut your finger they're not insured kind of
yeah,
if you hurt
yeah,
yourself.
I was
looking both ways with this CRT under my arm and like running to my car. it was quite exciting and I managed to get out with it
and it works like a dream, presumably.
It works great, man. That's there's a few chips in the glass, but like it's been so much fun playing the light gun shooters. And Power Stone looks so good on it. Power Stone 1 specifically really has blown my mind, the way this game looks on it. It was that moment when I booted up Power Stone, I was like, this is what everyone's been talking about. Because, you know, when I saw CRTs, I was like a little nipper, so I can't really remember what they look like.
I'd just like to say that, you know, at the Dreamcast Junkyard, we don't endorse jumping into skips to find your wares.
You mean at a junkyard?
maybe there could be some confusion there, I guess. Yeah, for sure.
The actual junkyard referred to in the title is Tom's Lidl bag that he keeps Dreamcast in.
The Lidl. Brilliant. Lewis, how about you?
I can't even remember what I've played. I think I was playing Wolfenstein 2 because I've been playing through those. Amusingly, despite it being like a game where you run around at like top pace and shoot things, it's I really like stealthing in it, like getting through a level without anyone seeing you and stuff like that. And if I get caught, I reload my save and try again. So not really the way you probably should play that game, but that's been brilliant. I did play some Dreamcast. My friend came round and twice in December, and we played some Dreamcast. We played Technomancer, which is a game I've played but like never played it one-on-one with someone else, and that was a lot of fun. The big one that we really got invested in was Seven Mansions. I can't remember its Japanese name, but it's basically like sort of a Resident Evil survival horror with tank controls, but you can play it co-op.
Oh, nice.
Yes, and it's pretty good, you know, and there were like some really great moments where we're like figuring out them kind of Resident Evil style puzzles together. And the only thing that's like a bit awkward is, I guess, to the developers did this intentionally to kind of not overload the game. I don't know what the technical term would be, but basically when you're in co-op, when you're together, it'll show you both together, but when you're in separate rooms, it'll show it in first person, presumably because it's like trying to load too much stuff all at once.
Yeah.
And so that can be a bit jarring, but like we had a great time with it. And it's a really good one. I recommend it very much if you're looking for co-op games on the Dreamcast, because obviously we wouldn't have played it before because it was Japanese exclusive, but it's got an English translation patch, so you know, now nice. We can enjoy it.
Very nice.
Can you play? You can play single player, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
And it's like the two characters that you play as have like different styles. Like one's more like weapons based, and the other one's more puzzle based. But when you're together, it's like, I guess it kind of splits it up. Mm. But it was really good.
Is it pretty smooth, or is it a bit of a janky affair?
It's got the you know, tank controls, Resident Evil, but yeah. Luckily it was pretty easy for us. I mean, my mate's never had a Dreamcast, so everything like was new to him, like the controller and, you know, everything, but he picked it up easy. So, and it's good that it's a bit janky, but it's forgiving, if you know what I mean.
Do you know, it's great to hear about all these Japanese games, though. I mean, I didn't import many games when I was younger, and Dreamcast was contemporary, and so the whole sort of Japanese import scene wasn't really my bag until actually quite recently. And it was Mr. Scullion's Dreamcast book that just having everything in one place as I'm flicking through it in the evening, and I'll just find something that I think looks intriguing, and then look on eBay, and normally they're, you know, depending on the game obviously, but normally the Japanese games you can pick up pretty cheap for the less common ones. And so I've been doing the same thing, just kind of making a note of certain games that I want to try that are kind of off the radar a little bit. And on that note, one of my games I've been playing over Christmas, I had this for my birthday, which was towards the end of November, Dreamcast-wise, was Runejade.
I just bought that as well. I just picked that up.
Yeah, there are rumblings that it's going to be back online soon.
That's exactly why I grabbed it.
Yeah, and I've always been quite intrigued by it. And I remember watching a PC Wizard stream a while ago when he was working on a translation for it, and he translated quite a bit. So yeah, I've just been sort of pottering about with that, using Google Translate on my phone to see what was what as I'm scrolling through various menus. But yeah, I think that'll be a really good one once they get that back online.
Oh, that'd be so cool.
Yeah, for sure. It'd just be nice to have another dungeon crawler other than Phantasy Star Online to play, you know, because everything else is a bit more sort of competitive. And on the Dreamcast, the other thing, obviously we'll talk about this. This is one of our news items later on, that the online functionality of Ferrari F355 Challenge has been restored. So I just wanted to boot that up and have a quick go. And this is another game I owned back in the day. And I quickly found myself just getting lost in the career mode again and just playing through hours and hours of that. And what a great looking game it is on the Dreamcast. For non-Dreamcast stuff, two games that I spent a lot of time over Christmas playing. The first of which, Sega-related, I had Sonic Origins for Christmas. I know they've done the collections multiple times by now, but the thing that attracted me to Origins is it had all the Game Gear games on it. And when I was a wee nipper, my first console, I guess, was other than my Commodore 64, was a Sega Game Gear. And so my initial childhood was very much growing up playing all of the Sonic games on the Game Gear. So it was just really nice to play through them all and just sort of re-experience those. And I think I beat Sonic 1 and Sonic 2 and then just kind of took a Sonic break from that. But definitely worth recommending, if worth checking out if the Game Gear games appeal to you in any way. Because the other stuff on there, obviously Sonic CD, Sonic 1, 2, 3, Knuckles, all the stuff you've played on multiple discs in the past. And the final thing I just wanted to mention, because it's been such a great game to play over the last few weeks, is we finally started Final Fantasy 16 over Christmas. And yeah, it's just like most Final Fantasy games, it just grabs you and soon you're sucked into the story and find it very difficult to put that down. And I'm getting very excited for the new Final Fantasy VII, the new part of that, which is out next month, I think, as well. So
yeah, I was glad to hear it's good, because like, I swear, like, Final Fantasy 16 came out to like little to no kind of discussion, and I was like, oh, there's a new Final Fantasy. Like, I was a bit surprised.
Yeah, it reviewed well, but you're right, there was not much hype around it, especially I think, you know, when 7 Remake came out, that was all everyone talked about for ages, and rightfully so, because it is incredible. But no, the storyline on this one is very good.
Is it a PlayStation exclusive?
I believe it is. I don't know if it'll. It's. I don't know if it's on PC. It's definitely not on Xbox. Definitely recommend checking it out if you like those sorts of games. Although a lot of people have said about Final Fantasy 16 is that it's kind of the Resident Evil 4 of the series, in that it's moving away from the RPG origins now, in the same way that Resident Evil 4 moved away from the sort of survival horror origins into this more of a kind of an action game, which is true. It's very much kind of, you can sort of hammer one button continuously if you're so inclined to play it that way. But to be honest, me and my wife just like to sit down and go through the story of these games mostly anyway. So there's a setting on there for just sort of story mode, which is kind of, you still have to play the game, but it's obviously very, a lot less frustrating, shall we say, than some experiences you might get. So yeah, definitely one to recommend. Moving on then, so we've got a jam-packed news episode today for you listeners. We've got a few different things to talk about. We've got some new Sega releases. We've got some hardware for the Dreamcast, which is going to become available. We've got some uncovered prototypes and mods that have been released. And then we'll talk about some new games and some online features to be restored as well, and some other bits and pieces for you lucky folks. So lots to get through. We'll start off by kind of going over some news that has been out for a little while now, and it's given us all a chance to digest it, which was the announcement that Sega are revisiting some of their older IPs, including some that have been left dormant for quite some time now. Those of which have been sort of announced so far are Jet Set Radio, Shinobi, Golden Axe, Streets of Rage, Crazy Taxi, and they also tease us by saying, and more, so we shall see. Guys, what did you think when you first heard the announcement, and how has your sort of feelings towards it sort of changed and evolved over the last few weeks since you found out about it? Lars, I'll come to you first on this one.
I tend to be quite a cynical person, I'm afraid, and I was excited to hear that Sega were finally kind of recognizing that there is some demand for these IPs, and that, you know, they shouldn't just be sitting on them doing nothing. But at the same time, I kind of have that nagging doubt in the back of my mind that if they bring new titles to these series and to these IPs, and if they're shit, then it could kind of taint things a little bit. It's that kind of dilemma. It's similar with like bands, when, you know, you've got amazing memories of a fantastic band that had a handful of decent albums and, you know, were touring when they were in their 20s and were at their prime. And then, you know, you pay a massive load of money to see them reunite 20 years later. And it's a bit of that dilemma really for me. I think some of these titles could be really decent. I mean, Bomb Rush Cyberpunk has shown exactly what Jet Set Radio could have been. And I think that's my worry with that one, is that I don't really see how they can top Bomb Rush Cyberpunk unless they take it in some other completely different direction. I mean, they're going to be carrying on with Streets of Rage. And I mean, Streets of Rage 4 was really decent. I like what they did with that. Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, it's a mixed bag for me. I'm hopeful, but I have to try and rein in my own cynicism, basically.
I agree 100% with Loz and his cynicism. You know, I've been following Sega, you know, for as long as since I got back into the Dreamcast, and yeah, just they've not really shown themselves to be, you know, the most reliable company when it comes to treating their IPs with respect. I mean, don't get me wrong, Yakuza's amazing, and, you know, the Sakura Wars game that came out a few years ago was amazing as well. And obviously, Bomb Rush Cyberpunk being as good as it was made me feel very much the same. I will say I kind of came at it with that angle of, oh, but Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, surely Sega are going to really have to pull their finger out if they want to top that. But then someone on Twitter, I had to find the thread, but it was quite an interesting conversation because it kind of turned my head a little. Because I was kind of the angle, like, you know, Team Reptile knew what a new Jet Set Radio game should be like, whereas Sega, you know, I feel like they've kind of been out of touch with the community and even Jet Set Radio, you know. Team Reptile put loads of things into Bum Rush Cyberpunk, like Too Mellow, who makes like Jet Set Radio style albums, and just having their eye kind of on what people want from a new Jet Set Radio. But then, you know, shout out to Lackaware, who does some amazing stuff in the translation community. He hopped in and said this, and I'll just quote him. He said, "Sega has had an opportunity to go much bigger and really innovate, while Bum Rush Cyberpunk is little more than a subtle refinement of a 20-year-old concept. BRC is what I always wanted Jet Set Radio to be, but Jet Set Radio 3 could show us something we didn't even know we wanted," which is an interesting thought.
That's a really good point, actually.
I agree with everything you said as well. I think the challenge that you've always got when you reignite IPs that have been, you know, pretty much dormant for a significant period of time, is that you're always gonna have this kind of awkward balance to make, because you've obviously, these IPs have not had the opportunity to mature and evolve over that period of time, but obviously the industry has. And so what we think of as a valuable video game today is very different to what it was 20 or 30 years ago. And so, you know, it's always going to be difficult to bring a game out that instantly pulls on those kind of, oh yeah, this is Crazy Taxi, or oh yeah, this is Golden Axe. It looks like Golden Axe, it feels like Golden Axe, but the problem is you don't want it to look and feel too much like Golden Axe, because the chances are, for most people anyway, that's not the sort of experience that you might want to have in 2024 or 2025 or whenever these games come out. So I think it's going to be interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of whatever they do, I think people are going to be unhappy. I think if they try and make these innovative new versions of these games, I think people are going to say they're not close enough to the originals. And if they make games that are too close to the originals, people are going to say they didn't innovate enough.
That's what happened with Shenmue 3, isn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
My first thought when I saw it was, oh my God, I hope they don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
But as I've digested it over the last, you know, since the announcement, I'm a little bit more optimistic. I've just been watching the footage again. And like, I mean, I really, really hope they do a good job of it, but, you know, it always could be a complete flop. But I don't know, some of the footage looks really exciting. So yeah. We only see seconds of it, but some of it looks really cool. Like the Crazy Taxi footage, I mean, it looks cool. And Shinobi looks cool. I'm glad they just went 2D with Shinobi. It's interesting they got a mix of 2D and 3D games. But I don't know, I'm now optimistic. I think I want to be optimistic. I want them to be good, is what's going on here.
There's part of me as well, based on what Harvey just said then about the 2D and 3D. You know, I know a lot of people, for example, will be disappointed that Streets of Rage is not another 2D game, because obviously you had the Streets of Rage 4 came out a few years ago and that was very well received. But for me, seeing Streets of Rage evolve into a 3D game was something that I always wanted to see as a Dreamcast owner. And me, that's exciting to me, even if it is a bit janky and it's not as smooth as what it might have been if it was 2D. And the same for Golden Axe as well. So again, everyone's going to have a different interpretation of these things. And I think Crazy Taxi is a really interesting one for me, because, you know, unless they make this some free-to-play open world thing, which might be completely fine, I just don't see how you're going to make a game for £70 that, you know, unless you radically change the gameplay of Crazy Taxi. Because let's be honest, whilst that might have worked back in 2000, primarily because it was like having the arcade game in your home, after 15 minutes, you know, you've pretty much seen everything that game can offer, and so that's just not going to cut it as a full price AAA release. So it's, again, the minute you start putting free to play labels on, people will immediately think the worst, even though there are plenty of examples of free to play games that work really well with that sort of business model around them.
I don't know if Sega actually outright said this, but people quickly kind of got the impression from, particularly the Crazy Taxi footage, it has the view of the taxi, you know, zooming around, and then it cuts to a police car chasing it, but it's not like, you know, some computer control thing. It looks as if someone can play as the police car, which does imply that it is a multiplayer game, and maybe completely, or there's a mode that multiplayer. And I can't remember how this got kind of started, but I'm pretty sure people started talking about Jet Set Radio also being multiplayer. And that's the one where actually there's like part of me that's like, that could be really cool, but I'd want it to be maybe you can play it single player, but then maybe your friends can jump in or something for, like, I don't know, score attack or something. So, you know, it could go either way. I was a little bit kind of, I don't know if it was just lost in translation, but there was that whole article, you know, they were talking about they wanted this like Battle Pass Fortnite thing, and it's like all these buzzy words.
No.
And it's like, you know, just as long as Sega know who their audience is, I think they'll be fine.
I'm just watching the footage over and over. I'm just kind of like watching the crazy taxi, you know, the 3 seconds of crazy taxi over and over. And it really does look like there's multiple players all playing together. So it's probably going to be an online racing element to it, which might be quite interesting. It might be one of those kind of, you know, racing destruction, see how much you can smash as you're racing around and smash into each other type of little bit Burnout-y. Yeah. It might work. It could work. I mean, I'm just trying to be optimistic.
Yeah, I think we have to be. And ultimately, as we've covered, I think, you know, it's going to be very difficult for them to hit the sweet spot once for one of these, let alone do it a dozen times or half a dozen times with all these different IPs that they're bringing back. I think we've got to be happy that they are bringing these well-loved IPs back into the modern era. You know, there's plenty of Nintendo IPs, for example, F-Zero, that you know, seem to have just been completely neglected and may never come back. So I think we've just got to wait and see, right? I think, you know, Lewis, you made a great point there that as long as Sega know who they're marketing these games towards, and if they do implement microtransactions and whatever it might be, then let's just hope they do it in a way that you know, makes people feel like they want to invest in the game rather than they have to invest in the game to get any sort of value out of it. And we shall obviously see which avenue they end up going down. But yeah, let us know what you guys think at home. You know, there is an article on the blog. You can go and have a read and leave some comments on there or drop us a note on Twitter, because we're interested to see what the community thinks about this. Because, yeah, I think it's definitely splitting opinion here in the junkyard. Right, moving on then. So we've got a few new hardware announcements to kind of get through. The first of these is the Retro Fighters Striker DC wireless controller is now available. I believe Kev has just done a fantastic unboxing and review of this on YouTube. Am I correct in saying that?
Yep. He did a little video rundown of it.
Yeah, and yeah, I must admit, I don't know what his verdict was, and maybe some of you guys will, but has any of you guys here tried this or planning to try this controller? I know we did talk about these before they came out, but since they're released now, what's the general vibe amongst the panel?
I have one. It arrived a couple of weeks ago. I've been using it on and off for 2 weeks. I really like it. There's things I don't like, but overall, I really like it. I actually swapped in my Brook Wingman to get it, because the Brook Wingman was just driving me mad, because it used to remember the controller I'd pair it with, and then I'd just, you know, turn on the Dreamcast, hit the pair button on the PS4 controller I had paired to it, and I'd sit down and start playing, but it just stopped remembering, and it was driving me mad. I'm not sure if it was a problem with maybe my controller or I needed to reset something, but I'd had enough of it. So I flogged that on eBay. No, I actually sent it back. And then I bought the Striker DC on a bit of a kind of whim to see how it was. And I really like it. Things about it I don't like are, I wish it was a bit heavier, and I wish, it's quite slippy in the hand. It's quite like, it's a bit too smooth, but in terms of its functionality, I think it's brilliant. You know, you turn on your console, you just hit the button once and it connects. It connects quicker than any of my other modern controllers. It just immediately connects. It's brilliant. I'm really impressed. I don't like the way that the VMU's, you know, on the other side of the room, but I guess that's the trade-off for, you know, because they want to minimize corruption of saves. If you're saving something and it loses connection, I guess it would corrupt the save. Also, there's probably a power issue maybe with it sucks more power if the VMU's in the controller, especially if you're using a backlit VMU. But apart from that, I'm really happy with it.
That's pretty much Kev's thoughts on it as well. You know, the VMU is quite a vital thing. The VMU cradle thing has quite a short cable. Like with Kevin, his video points out that, you know, he plays at his desk, so it's not really a big issue. But like the fact that it's not in the controller, but then it, you know, if I was playing it at, you know, downstairs in my living room, like I'd really have to squint to see the VMU in that little dock thing for relative to where the Dreamcast is. And like, yeah, it's all right when you play something like Tony Hawk 2, where it just says THPS2 on the screen. But like, for something like, I don't know, D2, which has like a compass or...
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
I think some of the...
Resident Evil's got your health on it.
The NFL games as well, I think they have some kind of thing.
You can select your plays. If you're playing with someone else, you can select your play without the person next to you seeing the play that you're selecting, which is quite cool.
And let's not forget about Silent Scope. You can like actually play the game on the VMU.
I mean, can you? I don't want to piss on this bonfire, but I don't know if it's because I just have always lived in dark, dingy, crap hole houses, but I could never see my VMU. Like, I don't know if it's the light or what, but like, I love the concept, but I feel that unless you have backlit, the idea that I'm gonna like glance down from my TV screen and stare at this little screen in my hand.
Yeah, I'm with you, Loz. I can't say I ever actually looked down at it other than certain occasions.
me neither.
it's like lovely in theory, but in practice it's like, yeah. it's not that central. Like I love it as an idea, and I used to love taking it out, having like little Tetris game on it and playing that behind a book in maths or something, but yeah, so that's not essential for me. I do get it though. Some people it's essential, and therefore this or say the Brook Wingman or Blue Retro, none of those will be, you know, will give them the proper Dreamcast feel because it's VMU-less. And in that case, you know, you could opt for the Dreamcon potentially, which is a lot more expensive, but you'll get a very legitimate experience. But yeah, I haven't played with this yet. I'm you know, hopefully I will soon. But I was wondering, Harvey, how's the two things in particular I was wondering about? How's the analog stick? Because on the wired version, people felt that it was a bit too loose. And then how are the triggers?
Yeah, if you're asking about like the durability of them, I haven't noticed any kind of, there's no signs of them breaking yet.
Yeah, the triggers are redesigned, yeah.
Apparently the other ones just were made of, you know, I don't know. What's something this Pink Panther wafers? It's an English thing. Yeah, but no, the triggers feel good. I wish they had a bit more resistance. I'm used to the PS5 when it's got these amazing like resistive triggers. They're fantastic. But to be honest, like I thought that when I picked it up, I thought, oh, the triggers are a little bit loose, and like, not loose as in rattling around, but the springs could be a bit more tight. The joystick, it's true, it's like quite easy to move around, but honestly, like, I'm so happy with the fact that you fire it up and you hit the start and it connects and it's just a seamless experience that to be honest with you, I've forgotten all about that. And I'm used to it already. The actual thumbstick itself is really nice and contemporary. Like it's concave, not convex. And I tell you what, it's just like, it's like the Xbox One thumbstick, because on the Dreamcast controller, I've on all my Dreamcast controllers, I've modded them, which I think is an essential mod, with an Xbox One thumbstick. It's like 99p off eBay for one of those things, and you just switch it out. And it's like almost identical to that thumbstick. So if you like the Xbox One thumbsticks, then you're in good hands.
Yeah, my OG Dreamcast, well, I say OG, my Dreamcast controller is one that I bought brand new about 10 years ago. I bought like a whole box of them because they were dirt cheap. And so the little tiny dots on the thumbstick, just to give it a bit of grip, is still there, but I've got some Dreamcast pads from when I had it back in the day, and they're completely smooth, which means your thumb just kind of glides off the stick every time you try and use it. So that's normally my my player 3 or player 4 controller, depending on if I like the person or not.
Oh man, if you like using a screwdriver, you should switch it out, because it takes 10 minutes and it's brilliant.
Mate, you know me, I'm a stickler for keeping things original. That's why I don't dabble in these wireless controllers and all this modern nonsense.
We had some comments, just to add to this, some comments on Kev's video. This person, the new Terrific 20, says he found that some games were like really great with it, like Fighters, Toy Commander, Rayman 2 worked like a charm, Virtua Tennis was great. But then he says driving games are mixed for me. Crazy Taxi didn't work. I presume he means just like in the fact of like what he's used to playing with, rather than like the controller just didn't work. And he also says, I don't recommend playing Sonic Adventure. I don't know if it was my thumb or if the analog stick was acting up. Whenever I tried to move forward, my character veers slightly to the left.
Ooh, he could have like a dud unit maybe.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And just to add with the triggers, everyone who's asked how are the triggers, because obviously they were breaking, I just keep saying, well, I've not had any issues yet. You'll have to like wait and see what people start saying, because
I guess the bottom line is this is what I thought when I bought it. I was like, I quite like even just knowing the VMU's there, just to, even though I never really look at it, it's like nice. And especially if I've ordered the VM2, like, it'd be silly to like buy this madly expensive VMU and have it on the other side of the room where I can't even look at it. But I just thought to myself, I'm just going to use the original controller if I really want to have like a VMU to look at. So I guess I'll switch. I've got like, you know, a crazy long extension cable. My telly's really far away as well. It's really far. So I'm really interested in having a wireless controller. So yeah, I guess for people like me who are really far from their telly, it's pretty decent.
Good stuff. On the subject of controllers then, so another new way to play your games on your Dreamcast is via the Dreamcast-compatible arcade fight stick, which has been added to Indiegogo. Lewis, you wrote an article about this on the blog. If you wanna take us through, is it the Octopus fight stick?
Yeah, by TR Fight Stick. I've never really dabbled with their stuff, but I know from just hearing things that they make super high quality arcade equipment. Like, they have a website where you can buy stuff to make your own arcade stick and stuff, and it's all like precision. You know, for the real diehard fighting gamers, their stuff's the bee's knees. But they're bringing out this pretty sleek tournament level controller for the Dreamcast, which has been extended in a collaboration with Brook to be like everything else imaginable, but it is like natively designed for the Dreamcast. So it's not just like the Dreamcast is an afterthought. It is made for the Dreamcast first and then everything else second. And it has like, obviously it'll have like the amazing parts they're known for. But then it also has a built-in VMU.
That bit is so cool. I love that.
Yeah, and you like switch between them with a button on the stick. And there's all kinds of like little things that like you can change the artwork on it, which is pretty wicked. And yeah, what I found was quite amusing is there's all these cool things about it. It's all proper arcade fighting fan lingo.
Yeah, that world is crazy deep. It's like, yeah. I don't know anything about it, but people are so mad for it.
But I feel like with this stick, you could become like an ace. Well, I suppose you'd have to be good at the game, but it is quite pricey, which obviously is the bit that kind of comes with the creator. So I'm just seeing how much it is on. So currently on there, they have a flash sale, which is $219.
That doesn't seem that bad. I've paid more than that for an arcade stick before, or about that. I paid, I think, I'm sure it was about £180 for the when the Xbox One first came out. They had a Killer Instinct. I don't know who made that, but I'm sure I paid about £160-180 for that. So I think that's within sort of what you'd expect.
Yeah,
but I guess that's not the normal price, Lewis, if that's the sale price.
Yeah, it's like a currently cut price. So I think it's like 240 something usually. 245. Considering, like, I think originally it was just Dreamcast, but considering they've added all this extra console compatibility and obviously, you know, it's a trusted company as far as the quality I think that maybe it's a fairly good price if you're really into that
pretty,
kind of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty substantial and impressive what they've done. So, you know, like it's not, I don't think it's obviously not easy designing something like this. It's pretty serious, isn't it?
Yeah. I think also the price reflects the, I don't know how much thought they gave to this, but you'd think that it reflects the kind of market segment that they're going after.
Yeah.
You know, your average person is probably not going to be playing with an arcade stick. A handful of people, well, quite a lot of people might have the official Dreamcast arcade stick, but it may well just sit, you know, dusty in a box. Whereas this, I imagine, is primarily targeted at the hardcore fighting fans. And you know, potentially it could cross over into like shmups and the like, but primarily for the fighting fans. And so if you consider that, you know, if you're that much into your fighting games and, you know, you need to kind of have every little marginal gain that you can get hold of, and if you're going to be spending a lot of hours with this stick, then I can see how it could be considered reasonable value. I mean, folks, if you wanted to buy the official stick and then mod it up to so that it was on a level with what this stick is purporting it will be, then you're going to be looking at some serious cash anyway. So yeah, I'll be interested to see what the, you know, what the reviews are like once it's out. I mean, I'm not a fighting game aficionado. I don't know if we have anyone on the staff who is, but we should probably try and get somebody in who's more familiar with that realm to review the thing, perhaps.
Yeah.
In the meantime, if you are interested, you can go and check out there. We'll put the link in the description, but you can go and check out the Indiegogo page where you can still order these on the discounted rate. So yes, one to go and have a look at. My tenuous links between topics are great this evening. Talking of crazy expensive hardware for the Dreamcast, the last thing I want to talk about with regards to hardware is an interesting little device by I presume they're a company called Multigame System, which may just be an individual making these things. But either way, you can find them on Facebook if you search for Multigame System, which sounds like some 100-in-1 Chinese Mega Drive cartridge or something that you would get. But given Sega's lack of Dreamcast mini console that they've yet to release, Multigame System have created their own Dreamcast mini. And they are offering the opportunity to either buy this in kit form, where you need to solder and paint it yourself, or they are offering a complete system fully built. And I must say, from the photograph that they have provided, it looks fantastic. I don't know how good the finished version will look, but the shell that they've created, the mini Dreamcast shell that houses, it's all emulation, so it'll house a Raspberry Pi, and presumably you have to load up your own games and stuff on there yourself. But essentially, it's got four USB ports at the front in place of where the four controller ports are. And yeah, for all intents and purposes, it looks like a mini Dreamcast. As I said, we want to see a proper photo of when it's all assembled and everything. But the kit form photos, I think, look really good.
I think this photo looks so good. I can't work out if it's like photoshopped. It looks so much like a real Dreamcast. It looks amazing, doesn't it?
I'm sure the bottom one is photoshopped. I'm sure that is a photoshop.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You can see Ryan where his hand is.
Well, there are some videos also on that Facebook page where he shows it, and it does look pretty convincing in that.
There's no way mine, if I did buy it, would turn out like that.
Especially if I have to paint it myself, yeah.
Yeah. So on that note then, the prices that I've seen on here, I think it's $100 if you want to buy it in kit form, yeah. Or you can buy the complete version for, hold your breath, $400.
Yeah, doggy. Yeah. That's a lot of money.
Almost buy you, yeah, PS5 or an Xbox.
I appreciate it's probably half of the reason it's $400 is because obviously this is like a hobbyist.
Correct.
Thing, you know, but someone pointed out that you could get a Steam Deck for cheaper than that. And
people always do this, don't they? It's like, yeah, well, you could just have a naked Raspberry Pi sat underneath your telly if you wanted to. But,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, I feel like this is the novelty of it is why people would get this.
100%, yeah.
You'd be gutted if Sega made their own.
Yeah, like a week later.
And you just spent 400 grand, not grand, bloody hell, $100 on it.
Yeah, this is very much targeted at those people who've got like a Genesis Mini, a PlayStation Mini, and NES Mini and so forth underneath their TV or desk already, isn't it?
Yeah, I love a good tinker. I love, like, you know, if I was, I'm not going to get this kind of thing because emulation isn't something I do or really like care about. Well, I do care about it, but I don't do it much. I like playing on the console, but yeah. I am interested in the design of the thing. It's really cool, like how they've used, is it the USB Type B?
Yes.
Plugs, is that what they're called?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So what are you expecting to plug into that? Is it like a, or are they just there for aesthetics and you use Bluetooth?
I'm guessing there's a converter you can get for it, is there?
Yeah, yeah.
I think I looked at that. The controllers, you mean, are you referring to?
Yeah, the controller ports. Like, can you plug a real Dreamcast controller into this thing?
Yeah, I feel like I watched one of the clips and I feel like he was using like an adapter of some kind.
I'm just having a look now. It's amazing. They got the fan, they got it all, and the inside of it really looks like the inside of, like, they've got the air vents in the right places. It's a lot of thought has gone into it. It's quite cool.
The shell that you can see, the mini shell where the picture he's got of it kind of in bits, looks very, very well thought out. And so yeah, it's I'm tempted to buy the kit just to make up the shell, just as something to put on my desk, you know, rather than anything yeah. else.
Do you know what I was thinking, James, is you could buy the kit and you could put your Dream Pie.
I was to Dream Pie, yeah, I was just saying baby. The same thing. Yes.
That's such a sick.
He's missed a trick there, not putting a Dream Pie in this as well.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. That would look really cool as a...
I'd love that.
As a little thing, yeah, definitely. So yes, it's nice to see this sort of stuff always. Obviously, you know, we always underestimate how passionate the Dreamcast community is. But something like this, obviously, it's not for everybody, but it does look fantastic. And I think I just wanted to mention it just to give him props for the fantastic job he's done to build something that is, you know, arguably better quality than half the other mini devices that are out there. And funny enough, I've had my PS1 Classic out recently because I've been kind of formatting that and putting a whole host of Saturn games, ironically, on it and things like that. And that one, I'm actually amazed at how good the build quality is of that. They're just cool little things to have. I think that's one thing that does appeal to me about it. It's just nice to have these little versions of their big brothers just hanging around on the desks or whatever.
Absolutely.
Easier way to play the games in HD as well if you've not got all the kit for like upscaling and stuff.
Yeah, we're lucky with the Dreamcast really in that there is a relatively straightforward solution even at the cheapest end to do that. But then you're kind of restricted obviously to games that were VGA compatible. But yes, you're absolutely right, Lewis, for sure. It's just convenient. Any closing thoughts on this before we move on, chaps?
Yeah, is anyone interested in getting it?
We'll chip in.
Yeah.
Only to find out it was AI generated all along.
Yeah. I probably won't unless, as I said, there's an option to buy the shell. I mean, if he does start selling the shells for like, you know, 30 quid or something, then I'd be very tempted.
I'd probably do that for 30 quid just to have a little Dream Pie, baby Dream Pie. Probably do that.
Yeah.
But apart from that, no, I don't think so. I've got enough retro consoles as it is.
Yes.
Do you wonder if it's like who's it aimed at? Because like I just play my actual Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Maybe it's people who like the idea of a Dreamcast but can't be bothered.
Well, there is certain people who like who really, really love emulation in the sense that they like love running different games on different devices and seeing what devices can perform better. They're like, oh, we've got the Raspberry Pi 4 now. This can run, you know, because I think the Raspberry Pi, is it the Raspberry Pi 4? Now it can run Dreamcast games really well. Mm. You know, and a lot of people love, like, there's like this massive public spreadsheet where it has like traffic lights of green, orange, and red. And the red games don't run so well on this device and the green ones do. And some people really love this kind of, this obsession with working out like what can run what, you know, like running Doom on a pregnancy test type of thing. It's that sort of appeal.
Yeah, yeah.
But like with certain models of Raspberry Pi, like I guess everyone's fighting, probably going to be fighting in the next 2 or 3 years to like see what tiny device can run PS2 games well. So I guess it's those kind of people. I don't really know.
Them people over there, yeah.
Them people, yeah. Moving away then from the hardware side of things and thinking more now to the games themselves. So a few prototypes and different mods are in the works that we've heard of in recent weeks. First of which is an interesting tweet that was that came out. When was this? This was back in end of November, where PC Wizard reported that a build of Woody Woodpecker Racing for the Dreamcast was finally available for people to download and check out themselves. I haven't tried it myself yet, but apparently it is pretty unstable. It seems to be a very early build, doesn't have any music and things like that. But as we always say on this podcast, it's always great to see and experience these things, these unfinished games that we may have read about or talked about back in the day. Anyone on the panel here today tried this yet or intend to try this at any point?
I gave it a bash. I really do appreciate folks who go out their way to dig these things out. I'm sure it has a lot of use. It might have some use in terms of, researching how the game was built, etc. But for your average consumer, yeah, it's not on the same level as some of the other games that have been released. It must be a very early build and it crashes and there's not much to it. But it's cool just in the sense that, you know, we've heard of this game for flipping years. Mm. And I always thought there was a release out there somewhere, and you know, now we've got our hands on it. So yeah, it was curious.
And the hope with all these things, as always, is that if one build is out there, the likelihood of a later beta or something that's a bit more playable is just on a dev machine waiting to be dumped somewhere. So it's always nice to have the confirmation, if nothing else, as well, that these things actually did exist. Because especially with the Dreamcast, you know, there was an awful lot of vaporware that ended up on this console, given the unfortunate demise and how quickly things turned around. So just to be able to see these things running on real hardware, I think is pretty cool. And you know, for all the kart races the Dreamcast had, it's fair to say it didn't have many that were sort of worthy of mention when you start talking of the likes of Diddy Kong Racing and so on and so forth. So yeah, good to see what could have been with Woody Woodpecker Racing.
I have heard that it doesn't crash so much on the time trial, but yeah, I've not played it myself. Sounds like it's a bit of a chore to play, and more of an oddity, like, or a point of interest, you know, for fans. Mm. But not something you'd be like, oh, I can't wait to play more Woody Woodpecker Racing prototype, you know. Just more of an interesting thing.
Yeah, definitely. One interesting thing that PC did mention along with this is that the build itself looks like it was a port using the source code and assets from the PS1 version of the game. And so it never even got to the stage where it was being optimized for Dreamcast and things like that. So I often wonder with things when this sort of thing happens, if I don't know how well this was received commercially or critically on the PlayStation, but it could have just been the point where they started to do the conversion and actually the sales were pretty dire, so they didn't actually get any further than porting over what had already been done. So you never really know what the story is behind all these unless a dev team comes forward to add a bit of context. But as we said, it's always just nice to see them and see these things running on real hardware. So again, if you want to check it out yourself, if you want to download it and stick it on your GDEMU, we'll put the link in the description and you can do that at your own leisure.
I just one last thing to add. I do wonder if people could take this prototype and work some magic on it. Like, because there's, and the thing is as well, is because there's already a version on the PS1, like maybe you could put the music in, maybe, or you could find what's making it crash. And you know, I'm sure there's some genius out there in the modding community that could do something with that, but you know, to be fair, it could be a complete like ball ache to do anything with it, but you know, maybe we'll see what happens.
Well, I think we've all learned by now that the Dreamcast community never ceases to amaze us as to the sorts of things that get discovered or developed or whatever it is. So there's always something new to talk about. So yes, we shall see.
Are you doing a nice little segue into the next one?
I'm trying, I'm trying.
Speaking of Woody Woodpecker.
Speaking of Woody Woodpecker.
See the Woody Woodpecker laugh.
In episode 364 of Woody Woodpecker, he comes across a metal gate. Lewis, you wrote an article on the blog about Metal Gear Solid 2 that would have been ported over to the Dreamcast. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, so it's there's a guy whose username is Frogbull. Yeah, he has quite a nice bullfrog avatar. But yeah, so he first kind of came to the attention of people because he did a video where he showed off I'll say it in quotes, prototype of Metal Gear Solid running on the Sega Saturn. And I think at first it was a little bit kind of nothing on their part that they'd done wrong, but it was like people thought it was like an original, like maybe Kojima had actually been working on Metal Gear Solid on the Sega Saturn. And, you know, this, I think that might be a thing that happened, but this actually, which probably makes it more amazing, is actually this was by Frogbull. He developed this proof of concept to show that Metal Gear Solid could run on the Saturn, which has obviously been a thing debated over the many years. So that was the first way he came up to us, and obviously I thought it was really cool. But when he showed off Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty, a prototype of that on the Dreamcast that he'd developed, obviously we had to get on the case. And yeah, it's really, really cool, like the footage he's shown off. And then I think he later updated, at least with the Saturn stuff, he's shown it running on real hardware. But this one's quite funny because there's a little sort of Easter egg he put in at the end where you meet Yukawa. So it's got that kind of little sort of Dreamcast additional flair to it. I don't think you can get this right now. I mean, to be fair, like I say, it's a proof of concept. I think he's literally done like a little area that you run around in rather than like, you know, I don't know how far he's actually got now. But so I don't think he's put it out for people to actually play because, I don't know, I feel like he'd get hit with some cease and desist maybe or something. So yeah, he's playing it safe for now at least. But yeah, he seems like a really talented developer. I hope he does like other proof of concepts of like other games. Go look him up on YouTube. Like the footage is really quite incredible.
It's so impressive, isn't it? I was listening to Sega Saturn Shiro when they were talking about this. That community is really clued up with their developing and coding and stuff, and nobody believed it. Everyone thought it was fake, and on the podcast, everyone thought it was bollocks. And in later episodes, they've kind of deduced that it's real. But that goes to show how hard this must have been.
Yeah,
a load of developers really did think it was a load of guff. But this is so interesting. It's so compelling. I would love to just watch it run. It sounds kind of silly, but I'd love to have a go on this. And earlier I was like saying about, oh, there's these strange people who like to see what games can run on what. I've just discovered that I am one of those people, actually. But I would love to play this. It's so super cool.
Yeah, he did Final Fantasy on Saturn as well, I think, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he did, didn't he?
Yeah, I just wanted to just briefly give props to Luke Benstead because this is actually, I believe this was actually developed using his Simulant engine.
Yes. Or
at least Simulant has some role to play within it.
Oh, that's very cool.
I mean, that's how you know it's not bullshit, right?
Yeah, so I think as a demo of the capabilities of Simulant, which you know, Luke's been telling us about for ages.
Yeah.
I think it does a great job.
I look forward to the Final Fantasy 16 port.
Yeah.
What did you play this Christmas?
talking about Final Fantasy 16 ports, Harvey, if we move on to the next one. No, yes, very, very exciting stuff from Frogbull there. And obviously, we'll put a link to the article up there, but I wholeheartedly recommend subscribing to him on YouTube as well, just to check out some of the incredible things they've been pulling off. Next up then, just to keep things moving, is another English translation of a Dreamcast game from Mr. Derek Pascarella. Are you involved in this one, Lewis, or are you taking a back seat on Death Crimson 2?
No, this is all him. I think he just likes to work on stuff. He's constantly updating how he's running into like certain difficulties and he'll overcome them. Like, the dude is just like a trooper. I am actually currently working with Derek on the First Love Hina game translation, but that's like early days at the moment.
Nice.
I know you had Death Crimson James.
I did. I was about to say, Death Crimson 2 was the first Dreamcast game I ever imported, which is a very interesting choice of imports. But obviously, as a day one adopter of the Dreamcast light gun with House of the Dead 2, so I was obsessed with House of the Dead 2 in the arcades with my best friend, and both him and I bought light guns and House of the Dead 2 for our Dreamcast the day it came out so we could play it co-op. And obviously, once the excitement of House of the Dead 2 wore off, you're kind of left with a light gun and nothing else to shoot. And so I was in CEX, of all places, I believe it was, at one point, and I saw a copy of Death Crimson 2 in there.
They did Japanese games?
They did, or at least this one did, that I used to use. And it was called the Computer Exchange back then as well. It wasn't called CEX at that point.
It's actually pronounced sex.
Is it really?
Apparently the corporate people said, apparently it's sex.
Sex. But it was, and the only reason I kind of went for the import was because, and I don't know if anyone remembers this, one of the Dreamcast magazines, not the official one, but one of the other Dreamcast magazines, it might have been DC UK, I think it was them, they gave away a demo of, it wasn't Game Genie, obviously, but like that action replay type thing where you add the codes to something, and they had a demo version of it. That they gave away, which had like codes on it for about five games. But unbeknown to them, or maybe they did know, but unbeknown to them, you could actually use that demo as a region bypass, because you could just, it would basically load up, and then it would sort of allow you to put the codes in, then you load the game up, and if you just didn't put any codes in and put an import game in, it would load the import game. So yes, that was my gateway to my first ever imported Dreamcast game. So I will 100% be checking this one out once Derek has finished. And I know we say this every time, but it is the amount of effort and work that goes into all these previously unobtainable Japanese import games for us to try. It's just amazing. And it feels like having brand new games to play, because they were just games that weren't really, although we could play them, it were games that you weren't really able to understand fully back in the day. So yeah, really great to see another one that's coming up.
I was thinking to myself the other day, it's so nice that Derek exists, because like he is such a machine, and he just, as you know, Lewis, you were saying, he just, well, you seem to know him. Does he sleep? Does this man ever go to sleep?
Oh, man.
And is Death Crimson 2, just to clarify, is that the one that has the light gun section sandwiched with the survival horror sections where you walk around? That sounds so interesting. I can't wait to play this.
I think it's like a bit jank, but I mean, as Death Crimson is known for.
Oh, I love the jank.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not that amazing. I'm pretty sure there's like there's a separate light gun mode as well that you can just play from the beginning, from if my memory serves me correctly.
Cool.
But yeah, it's an interesting game, put it that way. Talking of interesting, now, Joe. moving on then, one quick mention to an interesting project that's going on, which is the Dead or Alive 2 remaster that's happening over on the Dreamcast Talk forums. So again, from what I can understand, there's a community project going on where people are basically upping the resolution of all the textures. I actually remember a project that was happening on this years ago on Resident Evil 4, where people were doing like a HD remaster pack, texture pack for it. So yeah, I don't think this is done for any other reason other than just the love of the game. But yeah, it's looking at some of the updated textures that the community is pulling together. It just looks absolutely fantastic.
I was pretty compelled by this because it's not something I'd really thought about before. You know, we have indie games that come out, we have games that get put back online, all this interesting stuff. But I'd never really thought about games that have always been available that are now enhanced. And that was just something that, I don't know, tickled me a bit. And I love these shots they've got on the DC Talk forum post. You can see the kind of are they upscaled or are they totally redesigned? I think they've been replaced.
Yeah, they've changed the textures.
They're just changing the texture map, yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool, yeah. I'm not too familiar with like how this stuff works, but I'm not sure if it's the same person, but they put a different forum post where it would only work in emulation. And I was like, okay, that's interesting, but you know. But then this one that we're talking about will run on actual hardware, which is really interesting for me. And yeah, I love the before and after shots. They're cool. I look forward to giving it a go if they release it.
Just a amusing thing here on Dreamcast Talk, and they're showing off like the up-res graphics. And one of them is literally a character with his shirt off, and he's like, it looks almost like he's got no nipples, and then in the after he's now got a more defined nipples and a more defined six pack.
Brilliant.
It's important, Lewis. This is very important.
Those are the sorts of details that we, you know, we need to make sure.
Well, this is Dead or Alive 2 we're talking about here. Let's not forget what kind of game this is.
Yeah. the
breast upgrades.
Yeah. I still remember the very first Dead or Alive on PlayStation, and the bouncing breasts were just like utterly absurd. It was like literally just crazy how much they would bounce on the original PlayStation.
The bouncing cubes.
But you know, teenage me still loved it. So yeah, I don't know why I'm complaining. Moving on then, so a couple of online news. So Loza, you can take us through these, being one of our online expertos. As we mentioned at the beginning of the show, Ferrari F355 Challenge has had its online functionality restored. Not an out and out multiplayer racing game, but the online functionality is still good fun nonetheless. So talk us through what that entails.
For those that aren't familiar with F355, it's a racing game produced by AM2, released in arcade and on the Dreamcast, and it was later ported to PS2, I believe, but primarily an arcade and Dreamcast release. It's Yu Suzuki all over, you know, from the kind of design to the soundtrack, kind of cringy rock soundtrack, but it's great. And basically it's a racing game where you only race the Ferrari F355. It's all based around this one car, but it's a fantastic racing game. It's got a lot of depth to it. It's a game that you can take very seriously if you want to. Although it was in the arcade, it's one that, you know, you can focus on getting good times, and it will really reward you if you put your time and effort into it. Anyway, this game, out of nowhere, in December, this person called Flying Head just popped onto Dreamcast Talk forums and just went, "Hey guys, I've revived F355. Peace."
Mic drop.
I mean, they have had a few posts after, but you know, with other games, we often hear about them months in advance, and we kind of get teasers, and rumblings, and whatever. And this dude, or gal, I'm not sure, just came along and just dropped it on us. And yeah, so there's been a lot of people playing it. I mean, you can theoretically have up to 16 people playing together, at least in the qualifying stage. And I've seen some games that are getting towards that. So it's been very popular as of late. But it's not a out-and-out multiplayer experience in the sense that you're not racing against each other in real time. Instead, you all do your individual races, and then the game will amalgamate them together, and you will basically watch a replay with all the ghosts on the track at the same time. And then you can kind of, you know, you just sit back and watch that, and you have the suspense of waiting to see what position you came in.
Pretty cool. Yeah, obviously limitations of the system at the time, well, the online infrastructure, I should say, at the time. Yeah, we've seen from other racing games how difficult it is to get multiple people racing with any sort of seamless experience. I think just playing Monaco online and Daytona online will show you how tricky that was. So it was a bit of a compromise that they put together, but still good fun to play. And as Loz mentioned, as with any new Dreamcast game that comes back online, there are always people who flock to it to enjoy it and play it. So we're expecting a few more releases on the online side of things this year as well. We mentioned Rune Jade earlier on, and I know that some others are very much much close to being finalised. So,
come on, spill the beans. What you got?
I can't say anything else right now, I'm afraid. I'm sworn to secrecy, but yes.
I did hear a rumbling of Outrigger, or is that all hot air?
Well, I would not want to confirm or deny those rumours.
I really hope so.
One thing that is online, though, is Quake 3 Arena, which is seamless, boys.
Here we go.
Which obviously is one of the most common Dreamcast games online, and I believe there have been a huge number of custom maps that have just been made available to play. Not something I've been aware of. Was this your doing as well, Harvey? Is this one something that you you stumbled across?
Yeah, I mean, I've been keeping up with this. Did I send you this, Lewis? Okay, maybe lost.
I think, to be honest, I think I may have added it, but I think Harvey's probably better placed potentially to speak to it, because as much as I play online, I play very little Quake 3 because it's too late. It's just too late.
It is too late.
My tired old bones.
But I love the Quake. I love it.
Yeah, Harvey plays a lot more than me.
I do love it. I've managed, because if anyone doesn't know, the guys, it's a multi-international team. Is it a couple of Germans and about five Americans? They do Frag Night every Friday at on the UK clock. It's 1 a.m. So 1 a.m. on Saturday mornings. I've stayed up a few times to do it, but I also play Quake with my brother, Quake 3 with my brother. Like, he plays PC and I play DC. Every now and again, we play a few rounds, and that's really, really fun. And it works so well cross-platform. But anyway, so they've released, they've made 31 new custom maps, which is brilliant, because I think, is there only like five or six maps on the DC version? James, do you know how many maps there are?
Yeah, it's not many, something like that. Yeah, yeah.
So they made a custom GDI with these maps in it, and they've been testing them over the last, you know, couple of months. I've tried to get in on the tests, because actually, Lars, the tests have been at a socially acceptable time. They've been doing the tests on a Saturday. I think they've done things like put custom imagery, and like they've made some funny jokey ones as well. And you know, having a new bunch of maps is really going to refresh that game, and I think a lot of people might flock to it, which is great fun.
Yeah, just to add to that, so when we're saying they, I believe it's a couple of veteran Quake players. So Mechanic, I think, is the main force behind this, who's a kind of veteran Quake player, and then Holston, who is one of the administrators of the Sega Online Discord,
been on the show.
Yes, of course, he has been on the show, indeed. We'll put links to all that in the description.
Yeah, those guys have done a fantastic job.
Couple of new Dreamcast games coming out. Then I'm just going to whiz through these, guys, given we've been going for over an hour now. If anyone wants to chime in on any of these, then please feel free. But we've got about four new games coming out, and again, we'll put links in the description to each of these if it's games that you do want to check out a little bit more detail on. We've got Choo Choo Mimic, which is coming out on Dreamcast, and that is via Wave, I believe.
Yeah, by Alistair Lowe, who did Flea and Tapeworm Disco Puzzle, just to add. Oh, and John Riggs as well, the YouTuber.
Yep, so definitely one to check out. Slow Mole Plus is the new one. I believe this is going to be digital only, is that right? So no
currently, hardware. Anyway.
Okay, yeah.
Is Slow Mole a game that has already been on the Dreamcast?
I believe this is like an enhanced... I think it's originally an NES game, but I believe this is like an enhanced port of it.
Yeah, it was NES originally, yeah. But yes, I think this was released to sort of celebrate the 25th anniversary of the Dreamcast, so it was kind of like a Slow Mo Plus version. So again, you can find out more information about that from the Dreamcast Talk forum, which we'll link to in the show notes. Next up, we've got Cyborg Force.
This one looks interesting. This is a Neo Geo game?
Yeah, but what's interesting is it's not just emulated. I think Ian Michael helped to properly port this. So,
oh, nice.
So it's not going to have like shoddy emulation or anything. Even some of the indie releases are emulated. Mm. I think Mike has this, but it's not like a proper physical release, like on a disc. It comes on like, I think you get like a USB or something. I don't know how... Yeah.
What? No way.
It's a digital. I think you can just get it digitally.
Yeah, yeah.
And just to say, so it's a, because we didn't mention, it's a run and gun type game.
Yeah, it does look very cool, actually. Very, very fluid. And if Ian Michael is involved, then I think he's someone who doesn't get enough credit in the Dreamcast community for some of the exceptional work he does. So yeah, if he's involved or has been involved, I'm sure it's going to be a good one.
Got a bit of a Xeno Crisis vibe. I'm just looking at it. Yeah, it comes in. It comes in a little nice plastic box with a USB drive.
Harvey's in. He's doing his pre-order right now.
That's it. $37.50. Oh, it's sold out.
It reminded me of that Sega CD Terminator game a little bit as well, but I don't know if anyone's played that.
Oh, yes, yeah, I remember that quite well, actually. I remember that being on a, completely off topic, I remember that being on a Mean Machine Sega videotape that was on the front of one of the magazines. Anyway, and finally we have a game called Flick, which reminded me very much of the Windows 95 3D Maze screensaver that you used to have on there. I don't know much about this one, what the background is behind this, but I believe you can download this one and just grab it and play it, as far as I'm aware.
Sega Gurus, the gameplay footage is pretty much all you need to sort of understand what's going on with it. Like, it's quite a simple puzzle game where you literally have to flick a light switch, if I recall.
As always, though, you know, we continue to see a steady stream of new games coming out on the console, which is always great. So we'll always keep you posted as to what's coming out and when. Lewis, we did have a few miscellaneous items. Is there anything you want to pick out of there?
Yeah, just to be honest, it's a quick one regarding the Shenmue fan game Dreams of Saturn, because I've unfortunately not been able to play it because I don't have a PC. I know that's a bit cringe of me, but it looks awesome. It's this fan game of Shenmue, and it's like, it looks so good. It looks like kind of almost like an official release. It's all in first person, but it's just kind of a proper love letter to the original Shenmue. The best way to get a look of it, if you don't have a PC like me, is to watch a Shenmue Dojo stream, because it does look really cool. It's like got this whole plot of how Ryo wants to get a Saturn.
It's not a mod. It's made from scratch.
Yeah, yeah.
No way.
George Kitchen is the guy's name.
Damn, I would love to play this. It looks great.
It's free as well to download.
Oh, fantastic. Very cool. I'm surprised that you didn't want to talk about the Zara man bag.
Well, that was your... I was going to say, you can talk about that if you want.
Oh, I don't know if it's a waste. Zara has released a Dreamcast controller bag. I know. Read all about it. That was just a bit of an extra nugget.
Only in New Zealand currently, though.
What a random thing!
I know,
only
right?
Available in New Zealand,
and also just Zara doing a collab with Sega.
So
it's official.
Strange.
And also Chile, apparently. Chile.
It's very cool, though.
It is cool. It is so cool.
Before we wrap up, then, just a few points to mention about our. I'm trying to think of a good descriptive word for Mike these days. Someone, Oracle. Our Oracle has been hard at it again, producing another well-thought-out article. Maybe his book will never come out, but one thing that is available now for you all to go and read is the comprehensive and complete guide to all commercially released Dreamcast indie games. Mike put this up I believe this month, and he's just given a little blurb along with a couple screenshots and a box shot of every game that has been commercially released from an indie perspective, of course, on the Dreamcast. So it's a pretty lengthy article, so something you can go and have a read when you next get a couple of hours or in between work breaks or something like that. But as usual with Mike, you can tell he's actually played everything that he writes about. It's not just regurgitating some text from the back of the box somewhere. So if indie games are your thing and you're thinking about picking a few up of those that have been produced commercially, definitely go and check out that article that Mike has written on the blog. And Mike is also looking, following on hot from our top 200 Dreamcast games, Mike is also looking at the top 25 Dreamcast indie games. So he's been collecting votes from staff members and the community. By the time this episode goes out, all votes should be in. We should be busy counting those up. But it'll be interesting to see how the landscape of indie titles has changed since we last had a look at these. Guys, any thoughts as to what you're expecting at the top of the pile as far as top indie games as voted by the community?
Elysian Shadows, surely.
It's at the top of a pile. I'll tell you. I won't tell you what pile it's at the top of. But yeah,
I put Xenocider as mine. But actually, I should have put. I really liked Alanzar. But as the top, I think Xenocider might be at the top. I don't know. What do you think?
I feel like a lot of the games that came out recently will possibly do better, because originally on our original one, I think it was in 2016 that Mike did back then, Pier Solar was first, but I actually, this was before the votes started coming in, I actually said to Mike, I reckon Pier Solar is going to drop, you know, no offense to Watermelon, but it's a game that's like, it's a great game, but it's like, it came out quite a while ago, whereas like a lot of newer, more exciting games are like at the forefront.
My personal vote was for Driving Strikers, just because having spoken to Luke about it numerous times, I know the amount of effort and that went into creating that game, and the new ground that it broke as far as creating a modern interface to online gaming on the Dreamcast that could be reused in the future. So that was my vote anyway.
I have to just very quickly channel Daddy Dreamcast himself, because I know he would be with me 100% on this and say it's Wind and Water Puzzle Battles.
That is a really good Dreamcast indie, to be fair.
It is a good game. It's really nice. Yeah, I was saying before, I really liked Alanzar. It's so cool. Really interesting game.
It's like Myst, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got like a really creepy, strange vibe, but I really liked it. It had a strong atmosphere. And then there's a sequel called Philia, which I'm going to try soon. But honestly, I had no patience with it. I had to just watch it, like check out the walkthrough.
I think Postal deserves to do well, but I was saying this in the group chat, I'm not sure many people will see or consider Postal as an indie game, so I'm not quite sure how well that'll actually do, but yeah, I think that deserves to do well as well. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see anyway, and it'll be certainly interesting to see where the likes of Sturmwind and Pier Solar and similar games like that end up versus what they would have been a few years ago.
I think Sturmwind, I'd like to think, considering it was, what, like 36 or something on the top 200, it was the top rated indie game, yeah. And then surprisingly, like Pier Solar was like way back. Mm. Like Sturmwind beat out like some Dreamcast classics, you know. It is really like a force to be reckoned with still.
Yeah. It's definitely a title that I think is synonymous with Dreamcast when it kind of hit that sweet spot of when it came out, and a lot of people were kind of maybe getting back into the Dreamcast at that point because enough time had passed, if you know what I mean. So yeah, maybe that's why it stood the test of time. Right, that's been a bit of a mammoth episode, chaps, so I think we shall leave it there. As always, great to see so much going on in the Dreamcast scene. We say this all the time, but it's very rare that we're short of things to talk about, which is remarkable, really, for a console that is obviously entering its 26th year. and wasn't really around for that long in the first place. It's amazing that so much is happening still with this little grey box that we all love. So thank you, Loz, Harvey and Lewis, for joining us once again. Let's talk about where we can find each of you. So Harvey, coming to you first, where can our listeners find yourself online?
Just run over to YouTube or Spotify and type in Pizza Hotline, and you can check out my music,
which you will hear at the end of this show as well. Good stuff, Loza.
You can find my writing on the dreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, and I don't know, why don't you come surprise me? Find me at the Birmingham Bouldering Centre on Saturday. There you go. How about that? Saturday, I should give any a proper Saturday. Day, shouldn't I?
No, any Saturday.
Actually, any Saturday.
You've just got to go there every single Saturday now for the rest of time. Lewis.
Yeah, you can find me at LewisJFC on Twitter or X. And yeah, same with Loz. Just find my writing up on the blog. Yeah, that's it.
And you can find me on at Agile Harvey on most social media things. As I always say, I'm most active on Twitter, where I complain about everything that I possibly can. Of course, go and visit our blog, as Loz has already said, thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk, and we are the DC Junkyard on Twitter as well. So drop us a follow on there if you could. That's everything for us this week, or this show, and yeah, we shall see you all next time for the Dream Pod episode 128. Until then, keep on dreaming.
On a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers. Please stop this disc now.